Hello and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the Center for Total Quantity Management here at Car Talk Plaza.
I thought it was Total Quality Management.
Well, it is. I mean, this is a fad for those of you that haven't heard it. It's that sweeping boardrooms of America, this total quality management business.
Yeah, that's and what I always
That's okay, but here at Car Talk Plaza and in our garage, we use a patented system that we call Total Quantity Management.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, after all, don't you want to get as much work as you can out of your employees?
Of course.
I mean, isn't that the point?
What do you use, like a whip?
No, in our case, we want to get as many cars in and out during the day as possible. And if they're not fixed, well, we'll try again when the customer brings them back to complain.
I mean, that's right. Total quantity. So in and out, doesn't matter what happens. Just get them in, get them up, and get them out.
Get them out. Right. Who's that? Rawhide.
Rawhide. Does it work?
Anyway, this concept has worked so well for us that we thought that from time to time, we'd like pass along some tips to our listeners on Car Talk's patented total quantity management.
Yeah.
Here's TQM tip. Like TQM, I already have an abbreviation for it.
Total quantity management, TQM. That's good. It's interesting that it's the same abbreviation as total quality management.
Well, it just happens to be.
It just
happens. It's not my fault.
It's not your fault, right? Tip number one. Car Talk, TQM, tip number one. No,
right.
No. You got to do it like, who's the tax guy?
H&R Block.
H&R Block. Tip number 1171. Here it is. 1171. That's
right. Remember that language is an important vehicle. Notice the use of the word vehicle.
Yes.
For passing along values as well as information. It's not just what is communicated, but how it's communicated that motivates an employee.
Yes.
So with that in mind, we have a tip for how to handle a situation in which an employee has made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Well, according to the Total Quantity Management Handbook, from which I'm reading, of course, that's where this tip number 1157B comes from. The following response should be used whenever possible.
So the employee makes a mistake, and you're going to now communicate to him, and the words that you use are going to motivate him.
Yes, and the words are, "What are you, stupid?" Anyway, that's what works at the garage. Of course, repetition is important, too, so don't expect it to work perfectly the first time you use it.
But, so every time, even when he doesn't make a mistake, you just reinforce it with, "What are you, stupid?" Is it time for lunch? What are you, stupid?
Do you have any great mail to read, I guess?
Oh, mail. No, I do, actually. I have an interesting one. I was listening. Who's this from? Jay Heath from Seattle,
Wah.
Gentleman with a question mark. Isn't that pejorative, the question mark? I was listening to your show when I heard a caller talking about eggs in the radiator.
Yes.
Imagine my surprise when you said you had never heard of this time-tested remedy to stop leaks. By coincidence, I was talking to my 75-year-old uncle just last week when the very subject came up. According to old Uncle Ed.
And how would the subject come up?
I don't know. Maybe they're having breakfast.
Hey, Uncle Ed.
How do you want your eggs? He says, "Throw them in my radiator. I'm full."
This is going to require a follow-up letter.
According to Uncle Ed, eggs in the radiator used to be a very common temporary repair. The egg remains suspended in the water and drifts toward the hole in the radiator. When the albumin reached the hot radiator, the egg cooks, blocking the hole, and the repair would usually last several weeks. This method of repair fell out of favor when the modern antifreeze solutions were developed. Antifreeze restricts the ability of the egg to cook onto the radiator. It probably worked for the caller because he was adding water only to his girlfriend's radiator, thus diluting the antifreeze to a point where it did not interfere with the cooking process.
Aha.
It's always a pleasure to enlighten fools. Signed, Jay. That was a nice Jay. We would take umbrage if we knew what the heck it meant.
We would, if we could. If you'd like to talk to us, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys.
Hi, who's this?
My name is Ren Hauser, and I'm calling from Buffalo, New York.
Ren?
Ren.
Like Ren and Stimpy?
Don't even start.
R-E-N, Ren?
It's R-E-I-N-E, and it's French for queen.
Oh, that, and you pronounce it Ren.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's up, Ren?
This is one of those husband and wife questions.
Whoa. I'll let my brother handle this.
I am
this.
A husband.
He's had a few wives. I wouldn't know anything.
I am a husband and wife expert. I mean, I am the world's foremost authority on what not to do as a husband. Now, I don't know about the wife part of it, but I'll try my best to help you out.
Well, my husband came home one day, and he told me that he had gotten his radiator flushed, and that the gentleman who had flushed his radiator had also sold him a new radiator cap, and they insisted that anytime you got your radiator flushed, you desperately needed to buy a new cap.
And you said, you fool.
It's always a pleasure to enlighten fools, you said.
So my question is, I've got part A and part B. One is, how often do you need to get your radiator flushed? And secondly, is this a scam or what with these radiator caps?
Let's answer part two first.
Yeah.
Is this a scam?
Yes.
Yeah, probably. I mean, how much could they, if you're going to scam somebody, don't you want to scam them for more than a $5 radiator cap? How much was this radiator cap?
This is $22 radiator cap.
No, you're right. It's about $5-6.
Yes.
It's not expensive, but it's just the idea of it.
Yeah.
Well, he may have been party to a truckload sale. You know, that happens from time to time. We have these guys that come by from time to time, and I don't know where they come from or how they find us, because we're on a back street and we're hidden. But they come by, and they have like one or two items. They may have something like, you know, a cheap set of tools, which we wouldn't be interested in. Then they have these big containers of like 500 rolls of tape. And
yeah.
You have to buy all 500. Now, sure. You'd have to sell everybody a roll of tape. Your Kool & Flush and a roll of tape. So yeah. Maybe he fell into that trap. He bought a whole bunch of radiator caps, and he's selling them to everyone. I think it would be a nice touch if he gave one away with each.
Well, see, it's interesting, because this is an interesting strategy on the part of the shop, wherever they are. Because if you pull a scam for $500, the guy's going to go out and check. He's going to make sure that this is really what he needs. But if you just hit everyone for a lousy $5, it would have everybody who comes into the shop, oh, by the way, I checked the radiator, $5.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Right.
And no one will ever complain about a lousy $5.
Well, Ren's complaining. She wants her money back.
Yeah, well, these guys are definitely pulling a scam. It's true that sometimes you do need a new radiator cap, but the radiator cap can be tested. And all you're testing to see is if it holds the pressure.
Right.
And to think that you need a new one every time you get the radiator flushed,
I've got it figured out.
Is nonsense.
It would take him, let's say he's charging $50 an hour labor at this shop. By the time he digs out the pressure tester and hooks it up and tests the cap, it would cost you $5 in labor.
Oh.
And then there's always the possibility the cap is no good.
So he's saving you all that.
He's saving you money. Yeah, that's, yeah. What a
what
guy.
What a nice guy.
What a heck of a
yeah,
guy.
Except that he had done exactly the same thing less than a year before.
So you want to know how if he's flushing it way too often. I would say if you're flushing it every year, that perhaps is way too often.
Every couple of years might be okay, though.
You think so? And does it have anything to do with fluctuations in temperature?
No.
I mean, you don't need to do it before the winter?
No.
During...
No, all you need to do before the winter is to make sure that during the warmer weather, nobody has diluted that antifreeze with plain water. For example, if you had a slow leak and your husband, we now know is an idiot, was diluting the antifreeze by adding just plain water repeatedly, then by the time the winter came around, you'd have a solution that was incapable of keeping the engine from freezing.
He's much too bright to do that.
No, you wouldn't be adding anything unless you had a leak. But you didn't have any of those things, and this your husband fell for it. But I don't think he's an idiot. He's just a nice guy, a nice trusting fellow.
That's it.
And you shouldn't send him to the shop anymore. He's too nice a person.
You think I should go?
You should go.
Yeah.
You sound like a real.
Thanks, guys.
I'm sorry.
Has he recovered from this? I mean, has he developed a twitch or anything? Is he insecure now?
You know, he's laying down with a cold compress right now.
Say hello to your husband. He's a sweet person.
He is.
Thanks for your
I
call.
Know he is.
Thank you.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Buddy from Las Vegas.
Buddy. What's up, man?
Well, I have a 1991 Toyota Corolla All-Track. Last month, the clutch went out. So I went in, I had it, had a clutch put in it, pressure put.
How long you had this car?
I bought it new. Bought it brand new.
Hmm, that's good.
So when I downshift from fourth into third, it'll grind. This sucker will grind and grind and grind. It'll finally go in, but it's hard. And
it grinds as it's going into the gear.
As it goes into the gear, right, into third gear only. Ooh. Had it back to the mechanic a couple of times, and They're telling me now that it may be in the transmission, that they're going to have to pull the transmission.
It didn't do this before you had the clutch done.
That's correct.
Not even a hint of it.
Not a hint of it. When the clutch went, naturally it was hard to get into the gears.
All right, I'm going to have to get your mechanic off the hook here.
Okay.
Because I don't think they did anything wrong. I mean, it's doubtful they could have done anything wrong in taking the trainee out, putting a new clutch in, and putting the trainee back in. I suspect what happened during that period of time where the clutch was going bad and you had difficulty shifting it. That's when you ground off pieces of the synchronizers in the transmission.
Okay.
How long was it bad, buddy?
Tell the truth.
It was bad.
How many years?
No, just a matter of months.
When it started grinding, I went ahead and took it in.
When it started grinding. But how long was it that you had trouble getting into gear before the grinding started?
No, it started grinding probably 2 weeks.
2 weeks. That did it. So for you to say, well, I didn't have any trouble at all, is, I suppose, an accurate statement from your perspective. But the truth is, while you were having no trouble, you were busy grinding up pieces of the transmission.
Yeah, I mean, if they put a clutch in, then if there was something wrong with the clutch, you would experience the problem in more than one gear. You'd experience it in all the gears because the clutch is common to all the gears.
Well, especially in first and reverse. First would be impossible to get into, and so would reverse. And it wouldn't be just one gear.
Right. So if you're not having trouble getting into first and reverse, then there's nothing wrong with the clutch. So they did the right thing. And as my brother says, when they took the transmission out, they didn't take the transmission apart. They just took it out. All the stuff, all the gears are inside. They didn't even see them.
So, well, they may have. Did you happen to notice a sign that they had hung up when you brought your car in? Transmission rebuild class tonight. Maybe they took the thing out, took your transmission apart, taught a class, made a few $100, and then slapped it together.
Oh, that's why they asked for my W-2 form, huh?
That could be it. Yeah.
No, I suspect they're off the hook in this matter.
The trouble is, I mean, it's going to get worse and worse.
Oh,
it ain't going to get better. Because every time you grind, you're doing damage. That's what the grinding is doing. And there's going to be a day when you will have no third gear.
Well, you'll have a third gear. You just won't be able to get into it.
You won't be able to use it unless you start in third gear.
No, you'll be able to double clutch. Do you know how to do that?
Yeah, I can double clutch it.
All right, well it's time to practice.
And that will help save whatever third gear you have.
Okay.
And when it
conks
out.
Save your money.
Save your money. When it conks out, buy a used transmission.
Okay, when it goes, I'll call you back.
I'm sure. See you, buddy.
Thank you very much, guys. Have a good day.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Mary from Makaua, Maui.
From Maui? How's everything in Maui? Is it 84 degrees?
No, it's cold here. It's about 72.
Bummer.
What?
Yeah.
That's what it is here in Boston. It's 72 in Boston here. So why should I come all the way to Maui? Well,
really?
So it's 32. I was lying. Maui.
Yeah.
You don't have any problems in Maui. I mean, our impression of Maui is that there are no problems. How can there be a problem?
Well, my car.
We'll fix it.
I have this question.
Yeah, what is it?
I can't ask my husband, and I can't ask my mechanic.
Oh.
So I have to ask you guys.
It's that personal, huh?
Yeah. We have it on lease. You know, the lease with the option to buy.
Yeah.
One morning a few weeks back, I was in a hurry to get to work, and I grabbed my kid who had to have an x-ray on his finger. I work in a medical clinic. We rush down the hill and get ready to park, and a car comes in with this radio blaring, and I was in a rush anyway. So I said, come on, kid, let's go. And we just got out of the car, slammed the door, locked it, and I went on into work. About 4 hours later, the security guard came and said, we have a report that your car is parked on the road with the keys in the ignition, and it's locked, and the
car's engine's
running. Yes. So my question is...
Oh, Mary.
how bad is that? I keep listening for every little sound to see if something's going to break.
Did you have a spare set of keys somewhere?
Well, this is the thing. Fortunately or unfortunately, my husband, his workplace is like the next building.
Great.
So I just sort of snuck in there and said, I locked my keys in the car, but I didn't tell him where I left the keys inside the car. So I got it open and everything, and the dashboard felt a little warm.
Yeah.
But it hasn't made any funny noises.
Nah, it's nothing.
Forget it. Oh, good.
We won't mention it if you don't mention it.
Oh, good. Because, see, the thing is, at the end of when the lease is up, we have to decide whether to buy the car or not.
Yeah, no, this...
buy or not.
This will not have caused any problems because don't forget UPS trucks run all day too.
And police cars.
All those police cars parked in front of the donut shops.
Oh,
those engines are running constantly.
Oh, okay.
No, all you did was burn up some gasoline, but you didn't hurt the engine because when the engine temperature got too high, the thermostat would open and then the cooling fan would come on, and it would do that if you were stuck in. Now, if you lived in New York, you wouldn't have asked this question because typically New Yorkers drive like this every day. It's a tantamount to sitting in your car with the engine running for 4 hours.
The real question, though, Mary, is, I mean, how often have you done this? Is this the first and only time?
Well, it's the only time that the engine was running when I locked the car.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I've done this myself. I hate to admit it.
Good.
I mean, I never admitted it to anybody. But
you're coming clean right today on the show?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have to go get another set of keys because my doors fortunately don't lock.
But he has no windows either.
the car was still there when you came back.
Oh yeah.
I've tried everything.
There were notes on it which said, "Nice try, buddy."
You think I'm gonna fall for that one again? So don't worry about it, Mary. Everything's right with the world.
Oh, good. Thank you.
See you, Mary.
Bye-bye. All right.
All right, it's time for one of our patented mid-show breaks.
Ah, they're patented now. Your application was accepted?
Yes, our mid-show radio techniques are now filed with the U.S. Patent Office under S for sloth.
Well, stay tuned because I'll have news about our beloved puzzler and the high seas when we come back in just a minute.
Sitting in traffic on the Tappan Sea.
And even though stone-carved garden booters cover their ears whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a jackhammer operator and miss grating noises when you get home.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly. <you know. laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says, "Listen to the show." Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and asking what you can do for your country.
Well, get this. You know, we think that the Puzzler is just a frivolous little time-wasting thing.
Right.
You may have saved...
A nation.
A whole country. Perhaps the world.
And I'm humble about it.
I should mention this guy's name. His name is Dev Anderson. And he says this, "I'm a machinery technician in the Coast Guard, stationed aboard the CGC Bainbridge Island, 110-foot patrol boat, CGC Coast Guard Cutter."
Very good.
How's that?
Yeah.
"During our recent patrol in the Caribbean, we had a jacket water fitting break on the bottom of one of our main propulsion engines prior to getting underway."
Oh, it could have been a catastrophe.
Oh, disaster. The Titanic. The engineering officer gave the captain a one-hour repair time due to having to drain 65 gallons of jacket water and refilling it after the repair. In a moment of revelation, I remembered a Car Talk puzzler where a vacuum cleaner was used to keep the oil from draining from an engine while the oil plug was removed. Immediately, I grabbed the shop vac, pulled a vacuum on the jacket water system, and kept the water from draining out long enough to replace the broken fitting. We were underway in 15 minutes. I was the man of the hour. I almost took credit for it myself, but eventually I told everyone that I got the idea from a Car Talk puzzler. Thanks for the help, Dev Anderson, machinery technician CGC Bainbridge Island.
Dev, what a guy.
And just and I have to say, I am thoroughly embarrassed.
Humiliated.
Because humiliated and humbled because I said, oh, God.
another unsolicited testimonial.
And there's a little note at the bottom. P.S. Say hi to Ray. We haven't seen each other for a couple of years. And thanks for the steaks. They were great. Okay.
Oh, God. Anyway, if you'd like to call about your car or anything else for that matter, the number is 888-227-8255, which just happens to be 888. You ready for this? Car Talk. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
What are the chances of that?
Hello.
Hi, this is Sarah Jane from Boulder, Colorado.
Hi, Sarah Jane.
Sarah, is there an H at the end of your
name? No, there is a hyphen.
Oh, my God.
Really?
Yes.
Between the Sarah and the Jane?
Not even Sarah Lee has a hyphen.
Not even Sarah Lee has a... Exactly right. Sarah Jane.
Yes.
I like it.
And did you have a hyphenated last name, too?
No.
Like McDonald Douglas?
No.
Yeah. Liggett Myers.
Wow. Where are you from, Sarah Jane?
Boulder, Colorado.
Got it. Okay. So what's up?
Well, I have a very simple general maintenance question.
Mm-hmm.
I have a 1992 Subaru Legacy wagon, and the owner's manual says that I should change the oil every 3,000 miles or 3 months, and I've heard you guys say that 5,000 miles is fine. But I don't drive 1,000 miles in a month. So for me to change it every 5,000 miles would be every 6 months.
Perfectly adequate.
Okay, so that's good enough.
Perfectly fine.
Great. Next question.
By the way, remind me at the conclusion of your questions to tell you about a little test I've been doing.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Next question. I normally use the middle grade gas, which out here is 87 octane. We have 85, 87, 91. But these big box discount stores that sell gas, they sell only the lowest octane and the highest octane, but the highest octane is usually cheaper than getting the middle octane anyplace else. But I can't always get there.
Yeah.
Can I get 87 octane when it's convenient and get the cheaper 91 octane?
You should use the cheapest stuff all the time. In fact, if they had 75, you should get it.
No, but my question is, can I switch between octanes?
Oh, yeah.
We won't tell.
You can switch. You can mix and match. You can do anything you want.
So it won't make my car sick?
I mean, that Legacy probably asks for 87.
It does.
Is that right?
Yes.
Oh.
But if it's cheaper to get 91...
No.
Well, if it's cheaper to get 91 than 87, it won't hurt, but it's cheaper to get 85 at that place.
Yes, it is.
And that's the cheapest alternative.
Yeah, but I'm supposed to get 87.
Well, you're supposed to get 87, except that's the number recommended for the rest of the world, but not for your altitude.
Yeah.
You can use 85 because it's the equivalent of 87 because you live in Boulder.
Yeah, but they recommend 89. So when I use 87 89 anyplace else.
Wait a minute. You said they recommended 87.
Well, I was adjusting for altitude.
You already did that.
Yeah.
Oh, so we adjusted too.
We adjusted for
right. So you get down to 85.
Right.
So you should use 87.
Right. But if I sometimes use 91 because of the financial consideration.
Sure, that's fine.
That's okay.
That's fine.
Yeah. You can always use a higher octane.
Okay.
All you'll do is waste money.
But here I won't.
You should never use a lower octane than they recommend. Well, unless your altitude is much higher than sea level, which yours is.
Well, you got the perfect opportunity here.
Yeah.
When you go to the cheapo place,
you
get half 85 and half 91. The average of which is what? 87.
88.
Exactly.
Wait a second, it's 88.
I was adjusting for altitude.
And 88 would be good.
88 would be fine. And it would probably, that would be much cheaper even than buying the 87, right? At the other place. So you can do exactly that.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And it'll come out to be right in the middle.
That's how they do it.
Oh, my God. Oh, this is terrific. Now, you told me to remind you about a test.
Oh, yeah.
Me?
Yeah, you.
You.
About what?
I don't know.
You said at the end of this conversation, remind me to tell you about a little test that I've been running.
I have been running a little test, and I decided, vis-a-vis this oil change business, to stop doing oil changes on my Dodge Colt Vista.
Oh, geez.
I have not done an oil change for over a year.
Really?
Yeah. In the interest of science, and I wouldn't do this on a newer car because it might have dire repercussions.
Yeah.
But on a car of that vintage.
Yeah.
Oh.
I just wanted to find out how long I could go before.
Oh, it's a test. You're not suggesting that others do this.
No. I'm really performing a test. I'm not suggesting, but I might suggest at some time in the future.
So you're going to wait and see what happens with this poor little Colt Vista. This is kind of a destructive test. It's like you're going to have the animal rights people.
No, I'm going to change. I've decided to change the oil after 18 months.
Don't forget a Colt Vista. Colt is an animal.
Will you be able to scrape it out of the engine?
Well, we'll see. Interestingly, it has not burned one drop of oil since I began the test.
Wow.
Because it's not in there.
Solidified.
Hey, Sarah Jane, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, guys. It's been a lot of fun.
Good luck up there in Boulder.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Daniel in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Yes, Daniel, in the Hudson Valley of
New
York State.
This is a familiar-sounding Daniel.
Daniel Pinkwater, the famous Daniel Pinkwater of NPR and book fame.
The same.
The one and only.
The one and only.
Now, you may recall, we have spoken previously.
Of course I recall. It was right after you published Fish Whistle.
Once we discussed my theory of displaced misery.
Yeah. I remember that regarding Peugeots.
The proposition that if you own a French car, no further ill luck can befall you.
Right, you are pre-disastered.
Yes.
Right.
After that, you assisted me ably in the case of the mysterious flashing dashboard in the car I purchased from five brothers all named Mike in the Mystic East.
Oh, yes, the five Mikes. I remember.
Yes.
The case of the five Mikes.
Yeah, that
Mikes.
Sounds like it should be a Conan Doyle mystery.
Yeah.
So what's the next chapter, Daniel?
I have the next chapter for this is a problem that I've actually solved.
Yeah.
It's well known that I am circumferentially challenged.
Yeah, you told us that.
And it is a cruel fact that I discovered that even if you've been fat all your life, you still get middle-aged spread.
On top, to add insult to injury, so to speak.
Additional.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, this resulted in my having difficulty in gracefully entering and exiting my car.
Yeah. I think that Honda Civic was not the right car for you.
It got so I had to run at it.
You have to grease up your body and get a running start.
Oil me up, hon. I've got to go to the store.
Grease me up. I'm either going to swim the English Channel or I'm going to go get a quart of milk.
That wasn't the worst. Getting out in a parking lot, I would draw a crowd.
Yeah, you can't get a running start getting out.
No.
Yeah.
So I decided I had to find something that was rotund accessible, all right?
Yeah.
So I began checking out various vehicles.
Yeah.
And my experiences were painful in many cases.
Uh-huh.
I can imagine.
I can report, for example, that the Nissan Altima is not for the diametrically disadvantaged.
There was a
tense moment in the showroom where it looked like I might have to be kept in there for a while. So I decided I wanted to go where there were a lot of cars. So I drove out to Danbury, Connecticut, where the rich people live.
Uh-huh.
And there they have one of these auto parks, you know,
right, a mall.
Makes
right,
one long stretch.
The auto mile and a half.
I went there, and there in the used car department, I found a BMW 735i.
Oh, yeah. Aye.
This is about as big as BMWs get.
Yes. It is.
I think there may be one other that's a 12-cylinder or it has two sixes.
One in the front, one in the back.
Right.
But this thing looks like a killer whale.
This is a big car.
Big car, doors like a church.
That is the car for you,
so
Dan.
So I'm looking at the car. Along comes a man, a Mr. Moriarty.
Yeah, Professor Moriarty.
Salesman.
Yeah.
And says, you know, we can get you in this car with no trouble. And I said, that's what I hope, obviously. So we did some trial entrances. I was able to gracefully enter and seat myself. So now I wanted the car very much.
Mm.
Bought it. Price was right. It was like Hyundai money.
Really?
On the other hand, there was a lot wrong with it.
Yeah. Mm.
And you soon discovered.
Mr. Moriarty said, we guarantee every vehicle unconditionally.
No kidding.
They actually fixed it. This car has got a seat memory.
Yes.
Press the button, and the electric seat will adjust itself to the position it remembers, in the case of this car, from its first owner.
Yeah.
Who was a guy, I'd recognize him if I saw him. He's got a 19-inch inseam and arms like a gorilla. But by and large, they fixed everything. Car
Jeez.
Is wonderful. They never hesitated to put genuine, incredibly costly parts in my car.
Yes, and they are incredibly costly. And the 735 had lots of things that could go wrong with it.
Oh, so many.
So many.
So how many days have you had this car now?
Well, actually, I've had the car for a couple of weeks, but I bought it in February because the parts take time to get here from Dusseldorf.
Right.
Yes.
So I had plenty of time to read my owner's manual.
Yeah.
I have it before me on page 3-07A.
Yes.
Heading Ski Rack, Technical Modifications, and Keeping Fit. And I read from the manual. Stop the car at intervals and try a few of the gymnastic exercises we have outlined for you on the following page.
This is so on your way to the slopes.
On
you
pages,
stop occasionally and you do the exercises.
On pages 3-08,
that's
plant B, keeping fit, we have a dozen diagrams, which include 1, swinging the arms. 2,
swinging. I like that.
Bending forward. 3, the hula hoop movement. Repeat 10 times. Bending over sideways is 4. 5 is raising one arm up, which we won't go into that one. Then we have others, the windmill, the deep knee bends, the 15 jumping jacks.
So have you tried all these?
Of course.
Of course. And?
Now,
and?
On page 3-10C.
Yeah.
An important contribution to journey fitness is made by correct nutrition.
I mean, this is an owner's manual, huh?
That you stay fit. You will not eat the greasy cheeseburger on the French fries. You will eat the fresh fruit on the rye crisp. Well, you know, in the time I've had the car, I've actually lost a lot of weight.
And now you don't need this car anymore.
Now I don't need it.
You can trade it in for a nice Saturn.
Exactly.
Gee, I don't have, my owner's manual's never had this level of detail.
Now, you know, I got a hold of a owner's manual for a 5 Series BMW, already a pretty classy car.
Sure. But not a patch to this.
There is nothing about calisthenics. There is nothing about the rye crisp and the fresh vegetables. This is only for the elite.
Well, you know why? I mean, they make so much money on these cars. They want to make sure that you live long enough to buy many of them.
Yes.
Or at least to finish the payments on the one that you bought.
But I have to say to my fellow fat Americans, if you can find a suitable one, this car has got lots of room, wood paneling. Mine has the cuckoo clock.
Yeah, of course. Is it electronic cuckoo clock?
Of course. Uh-oh.
Digital readout.
Yes. And it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Daniel, you are an incorrigible wise guy.
Me?
You, me?
Hey, why don't you come to Boston sometime and have a cup of cappuccino with us?
I will do that.
I mean, you're the kind of guy that I would like to have cappuccino with, because you probably can say it like a cappuccino.
And you'll probably buy, too.
And you'll buy, right?
I will motor up in my sports touring sedan.
Yeah. Daniel, always a pleasure talking to you.
Nice talking to you, Daniel. Bye bye.
Thanks
bye-bye.
A lot for calling. Bye. Hey, look, Tommy, I can see that the stress of always being wrong is finally getting to you.
It's not the stress, man. It's the monotony that's getting to me.
Well, look, you're in luck. It's time for a short break. So I can guarantee you, you won't be wrong for the next 60 seconds.
Woof.
As long as you don't say anything.
Woof.
We'll be back.
Ruff, ruff.
We'll be back in a minute.
Everything's wrong with my automobile. I believe it's turned on me. Everything's wrong with my automobile. I believe it's turned on me. When I bought it, I thought it was a steal. But I got burned, I see. I must have rolled over Indian gravestones. I must have passed up a hoodoo hitcher. I must have rolled over Indian gravestones. Must have passed up a hoodoo hitcher. 'Cause I keep getting broker, while the mechanic keep getting richer.
And even though NPR interns tweak their resumes and move NPR just below babysitting experience whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and apropos of nothing.
It is, because it is really apropos of nothing, but it just...
It says everything,
it
huh?
It struck me, you know? I'll just read it to you and you'll see what it does to you.
I'm sure I will.
It's from Dennis Kimball from Columbus, Ohio. Dear Click and Clack,
are we going to rate this on the scale?
The Andy scale.
The Andy scale?
I have a couple of notes about the Andy scale. We have to discuss that too. I have a quasi-automotive question for you. About 2 years ago, my wife and I had to return home from your fair city with little time to spare. We decided to drive all night. As I was the first driver on the trip, I began looking for caffeine-laden beverages to help me stay awake. For the first time ever, I tried one of those brand-name bottled teas. Within a very few minutes of gulping the last swig from the bottle, I developed the urgent need for, as you say, a haircut. And it was not just a gradual development. Inside of approximately 10 minutes, I went from perfect contentment to an instant demand for a wicked haircut. Fortunately, I found relief at a fully appointed roadside rest area.
Is it need a haircut or need two haircuts?
It's a.
Right?
Being a little slow in making a causal connection between the tea and this condition, I consumed yet another bottle of the beverage at a later point of the trip. Sure enough, within minutes. Well, sure enough, within minutes, I was once again doing the sit-down rumba. I was doing the sit-down rumba, and the search was on for an all-night... The search was on for an all-night barbershop. With an open chair. My question is whether this is a normal reaction to bottled teas, or should I have my cosmetological metabolism examined by a professional? Perplexed, Dennis Kimball, Columbus. It did it to you too, right? What a great letter. I give that a 6 on the Andy scale.
Oh, I was going to go 6.5.
Actually, do I have another minute?
Sure.
We have to discuss this. Otherwise, we're going to be screwed up for the rest of our lives if we don't get this straight. I'm writing in response to your suggested Car Talk letter rating system based on a scale of Andy units. I mean, if those of you who've never heard of us before, we have a letter which we thought was the epitome of letters, written by Andy Reichman from Marlborough, Vermont. And shall I read the one sentence that did it?
Well, you obviously have to.
I mean, this is an entire page, but he discusses whether or not two people who don't know...
He puts forth the thesis.
The thesis.
That two people can know less than one person.
Right. The two people who don't know what they're talking about know more or less than one person who doesn't know what he's talking about. And somewhere in this missive, there's this sentence. With two people, the intricacies, the gives and takes, the wherefores and why nots can become a veritable pas de deux of breathtaking speculation interwoven in such a way that apologies or gestures of doubt are rendered unnecessary. I mean, I will read Andy's entire letter one of these days again. But however, Casey Rice from Whidbey Island, Washington says, I'm troubled by your placement of it at 8 on the proposed scale. basing an 8 is counterintuitive, and by extension, it suggests that Andy's groundbreaking, gauntlet-laying, hysteria-inspiring achievement is somehow less than itself. In
yes.
the future, the question will surely come up. If Andy's an 8, then what is the 10? The answer will be, of course, that Andy's first letter should be 10. It is the benchmark of Car Talk written correspondence in the modern era, and so should be given a more respectful, sensible, and stand blah, 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 blah. Remember, Roger Maris and Henry Aaron have their places, but we never forget the babe. So I think Casey's right. I think, Andy, it's got to be a 10. Do you agree?
Well, no, I don't agree, frankly, but
you don't.
I'll bow to the pressure, I guess,
I mean,
if I have to.
You're saying this is so good, but you think it could be better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, we'll have to leave it to our listeners.
Let's compromise. It's a 9.
Okay.
Now, some of you may be wondering where the puzzler is.
Hey, I was wondering where the puzzler is.
Get off my back, will you?
Well, if you need to shock your brain cells out of their summer torpor, just go to our website, cartalk.com, and check out this week's archival puzzler.
Hmm. Archival? Does that mean it was so great that we saved it? Archived for future generations?
No, it just means we got less than the usual number of complaints about it.
Good enough. Well, look, if you have a complaint about your car or anything else, you can reach us at the following number. IVIIVIIVIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIV. That's 1-888-888-CAR-TALK. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Bob from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Cincinnati.
Gee, you know, we don't get many calls from Cincinnati.
I wonder why that is.
Are we on there? Huh? Or are you just traveling through?
Oh, I've been here for 40 years.
What kind of a place is Cincinnati?
Oh, it's a beautiful place.
It is, huh?
Yes, and it's sort of slow, and the people are what we call...
Nice.
Nice.
Well, Cincinnati has a southern, you know, mentality, from what I understand.
Right.
Yeah, people are polite and genteel.
Polite.
And
just
all
like
that.
Boston.
Right, just in New York.
In New York, right.
So what's up, Bob?
Well, I heard your program last week, and I hear that you guys are in the market for a 65 Rambler Ambassador.
Ah! Well, we were for a while. Why, you have one?
I have one. I'm the original owner.
No kidding.
It isn't a convertible, is it?
It is a convertible.
Oh! Is it really?
Ooh, now you show up.
How much is my brother going to have to pay for this?
I don't know, but I've had it up in the market for some time now.
For some time? What kind of price?
Well, I...
Come on, don't be shy. You're on...
I'm just feeling around. There is nothing that I can go by.
Okay.
Yeah, there are no
you're looking
blue
for like
books.
$200 or $300 or something for this?
You know, I just got in the mail today a sympathy card, and it's got on the front of it a pretty little pastel flowers, and it says, with deepest sympathy. And inside it says, Dear Tom, sending deepest sympathy and wishing you peace and comfort upon losing your bet with Ray and forevermore unable to utter those three little words.
Sleek black beauty.
That meant so much to you. Nora Stoddard.
Yours isn't black, is it, Bob?
No, but I can...
It can be black.
Right. Well, look, Bob, I think it's important that you send us a photograph along with the spec sheet and the price sheet.
What kind of shape is it in?
It's in beautiful shape.
Tell the truth, though. Do you drive this thing?
I do.
And even with this deep love that you have for this car, you're willing to part with it.
If the price is right.
If the price is right.
Send us all the important stuff.
Send me a picture. I really want to see this car.
I have all the, everything that the manufacturer made for that car. Literature and everything.
Oh.
Send them, will you, Bob? Oh. I want to be able to just dangle them in front of my brother's face. What a guy. Thanks for your call.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
I'll never forgive Patty, whatever her name is, from some of them. I'll never, and her mother. What was her name? Vicky. Jackie.
Jackie.
I know she lied, and I know you paid her.
I did, but not much. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Mary Lynn from Kennewick.
What?
Mary Lynn.
Mary Lynn.
Wait, we're going to guess where Kennewick is.
Kennewick.
How do you spell Kennewick? Give us a
K-E-N-N-E-W-I-C-K.
Well, it's either in Maine.
Wrong.
Which is wrong. Or it's in the great Northwest, like Oregon or Washington.
You're very good. Washington.
Washington.
Yes.
What's up?
I am on the horns of a dilemma. I'm torn between my own personal safety and the safety of my beloved 1990 Maxima, and between preserving the positive self-image of my engineer husband.
Oh boy. So now, lay it on us.
What happened was this summer, my Maxima started started feeling like it had a flat tire when I would apply the brakes from going 55 miles an hour coming up to a stoplight.
Mm-hmm. Meaning that it would like pull harshly to the right?
No, kind of like a thumpity thumpity.
Thumpity thump.
But okay. It sounded like the one side of the tire was flat.
Thumpity thump. Let me just write that down. Thumpity thumpity. Okay, I've got that.
Yeah. Okay. So I called the fellows that had just put new tires on our car about a month before that and described the problem. And these are really good guys, knowledgeable guys. And he said...
They're in the tire business?
Yes.
They're not
yes.
good guys.
Yes, they are good guys.
You can be guaranteed that they're not.
Well, okay. Well,
but that's all right. My brother has
a... In my opinion.
Right, in his opinion.
Anybody in the automotive business of any kind... is a sleazeball.
Okay.
In my humble opinion.
In his opinion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially tire dealers.
Go ahead, Marilyn.
All right. So thumpity thumpity, you call these nice guys up and they say what?
And they said that it was possibly a hard spot in the rotor and it was because it had suddenly turned hot, I was noticing it, but it would probably go away and it wasn't a lethal condition. And I reported this to my husband, and he said, well, we won't worry about it. It's probably not really happening anyway. He thinks I imagine these things.
Husbands always do that.
I know.
Yeah.
So I, all right, fine, I drove on it. But now it's getting worse and worse, and now I don't have to be going fast to apply the brakes. Now it happens if I'm only going 30 and apply the brakes, I get this thumpity-thumpity. But see, my husband prides himself on being able to diagnose and fix anything, and usually he can. You know, engineers are like that.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to go against his opinion.
But you feel unsafe in the car.
Yeah. And but so he's in China right now, so I thought this is the perfect time to call you guys because I don't imagine that they get Car Talk in Shanghai.
Well, so, they might. What do we know?
They might.
They might.
Yeah.
All right.
So is it lethal? Should I ignore him and bruise his ego and go have them fix it, or should I just keep driving it?
Well, here's the important question.
Okay.
Who pays the credit card bill? Who writes the check for the credit card?
Well, I write the check, but he puts the money in the account.
But he doesn't look at the Visa bill when it comes to the house.
Not usually. Well, sort of, but not usually.
He doesn't really care.
I mean, if who's there when the mail gets delivered?
Me.
All right, you're all set.
You're all set.
Yeah, go and get it fixed.
So I should go and get it fixed?
Yeah. I mean, if it only happens when you step on the brake.
Yes.
Despite the fact that there was a very close coincidence in time that the guys put new tires on and then you get this noise.
Yeah.
One would suspect that it's the tires that are at fault. But if that were the case, you would probably hear the thumpity thumpity thump other times than just when you step on the brake.
It's certainly not the tires.
That's what I thought.
You do have a warped disc, which is getting worse by the day. You may have two warped discs. But the tire guys may have caused it.
They could have caused the warped disc.
Yes, they could have caused it.
By over-torquing the wheel nuts.
Oh, I got to write this down.
No, I debated whether or not to tell you this.
Well, see, you can tell her, but there's nothing she can do about it.
No, there's nothing she can do.
See, in the old days, when you put on a wheel, you could tighten those things up until the cows came home and not much would happen.
Right.
But when you have disc brakes, if you really tighten up those lug nuts, you can actually bend the rotor.
Or if you tighten them unevenly.
Okay.
And it's possible that they caused the problem.
Oh, so maybe they'll fix this for nothing?
Fat chance, Mary Lynn. Fat chance, because as I said, there's no way you can prove it. Unless, maybe, hold it now, maybe there is a way you can prove it. Here's what you have to do.
All right.
You have to find a mechanic who has a torque wrench is also a notary public.
Here in Kennewick, Washington.
I'm sure you can do that. Or you have to bring your own notary public with you.
Oh, I know.
And you must have the second mechanic remove the lug nuts one at a time, each time recording the torque necessary to loosen it.
Okay.
You are a fiendish creature, my brother is.
So it is possible to prove it. But if you just walk in there and say, hey, guys, I got this problem. I got warped rotors, and these two jerks on the radio suggested that you are responsible. they're going to say,
okay.
But you need to get it fixed because it is increasing your stopping distance.
Oh, it is.
Yeah,
sure.
It is.
So it is dangerous.
Okay.
And after all, you're the one driving the car. Why should you have to put up with the thump, 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 thump?
Well, yeah, that's true, but I just don't want to, you know, hurt my husband.
Yeah, let Eli Whitney drive the car, whatever his name, the engineer. What does he drive?
He drives an elderly Mazda pickup truck with absolutely no frills, and the shocks are practically gone.
Oh, then forget it. You get this thing fixed. He's on his own.
Well, I mean, what you do is up to you. It's going to cost you a few hundred bucks to get this done.
A few hundred?
More than a few.
Oh.
So if you're willing to just swallow the $300 or $400, you can dispense with the notary public portion of our advice.
Okay.
But if you want to make a point here,
uh-huh,
and go back to those tire guys and prove to them
that
they're doing something wrong and they ought to really torque those lug nuts like the book says.
Well, there is a thing called a torque stick which they can use that you put in between your impact gun and the nut, and it prevents you from over-torquing them. It releases the torque.
But you would think a tire shop would have this.
And they may, and it may not be their fault. That's why I hesitated to mention it. And I knew once I did that my brother would jump on the bandwagon and become a jerk about it.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything you can do. Just pay the money. See you, Mary Lynn.
Thank you, guys.
And get it done before Eli there gets back from China.
All right. I'll hurry right down.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Pay
bye-bye.
Cash if you have to.
Okay. I'll do that. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's happened again. You've wasted 2 more hours listening to Car Talk.
It's not 2 hours. It just seems like...
Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Oslo Salmon Roe, Pernod, Fried Dough, Jell-O Cocoa, and Sweet and Low Meal to Go, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin O'Vara. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our staff bicycle tester is Maya Sertz. Our studio repair technician is Sloan Cranky. Our student consultant is Norm DePlume. Our dermatologist for teenagers is Don Pickett. Our emergency room physician is Henrietta Bad Clam. The pre-recorded portions of today's show were selected by staff librarian Alvin Heard Before. The Car Talk musical director is Donna E. Mobile. Our senior citizen driving instructor is Tanya Blinkeroff.
Does she know?
Oh, yeah. Our divorce attorney is Carmine Not Yours. Our Russian chauffeur is Pikoff and Dropoff. And our seat cushion tester, as always, is Mike Easter. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the pigeons in Red Sox hats in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and above all, don't drive like my brother.
And above all, don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week, we hope. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1432, discover classic Car Talk episodes, and check out our overpriced junk and CD collections all over at cartalk.com. Also this week at cartalk.com, our humble opinion on one of the great automotive debates of our time.
Sticker automatic?
Nope.
Foreign or domestic?
Nope. One more try.
Fire or theft?
No. Premium versus regular, and whether you ever need to use premium gas.
Good question.
And you can find out answers all week at cartalk.com.
You do realize I was just kidding about that fire or theft thing.
Oh,
I would never
not
get rid of
no.
my car that way.
Tell it to the judge, pal, will you? Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though the NPR Bugle Corps breaks into taps whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.